So I'm going to try to not talk a mile a minute. I'm going to try not to scream. I'm going to try to be very, you know, cool and calm. But let me start by saying I miss the WFAN audience. I missed Tiki Barber. And shockingly, I feel like Dorothy when I say this, I think I miss Tommy Lugauer the most of all. Tommy. I hope you're not insulted by that, Tiki. Are you?
Not at all. I'm just happy you're back. I honestly was questioning whether or not you were coming home. If you were going to stay on vacation and torture yourself and your wife and your kids watching baseball games in the middle of the night. Luckily, you had the All-Star break, because otherwise the crap that they came back and started the second half of the season with would have really driven everybody crazy.
But we're
glad to have you back, Evan.
Thank you. That would have made it worse. When you watch baseball games that start at 1 in the morning, that's bad enough. And then when you lose, it makes it worse. I will tell you, and I don't know if you share this belief. I don't know if baseball fans share this belief. But I'm an emotional guy, and so as much as I try to talk rationally about a long baseball season, rationally about bullpens and rotations and lineups, there are certain things that get to me emotionally. And I'm going to surprise you with what I'm about to say, because you think it's going to be David Wright or something Met-related. It's actually Yankee-related. The way they won on Saturday, the way they came back on Saturday in Atlanta, for those that remember 2009, some similarities there, because when you think of the 2009 team, you think of a win they had in Atlanta in June when the manager at the time, Joe Girardi, got fired. And I said it at the time, that was like, that's going on the DVD if the season ends well.
Right.
The way the Yankees came back and dramatically won on Saturday, and I feel this way 48 hours later, feels like championship DVD stuff.
Yes.
So I don't know if you share that. I don't know if Yankee fans feel that way, but that kind of comeback makes me think all is right in the world of Yankee land. Well, Am I nuts?
It's because they bludgeoned you, they bludgeoned the Braves back into victory. Because after Friday, where they had that bullpenning game, it was just ugly. It just felt like, ugh, man, we are in trouble. And we don't have, if this is the depth in our starting rotation, the Yankees are in serious trouble. And then you start the next day the way that they started, with just kind of miscues everywhere, and you get down big, and all of a sudden you remember, you remind yourself, you know what? We can just go yard.
Yeah.
We can just get guys on base and clean this thing up really quickly. Obviously, Trent Grisham hitting the grand slam that was the ultimate winner in the ninth inning. But like, that made you feel like this is the Yankees team you expected all season long. You got enough big bats. Do your job when you need to do your job.
And you throw in the fact that Anthony Volpe, who has become the whipping boy around here, right, delivers this incredible two-home run performance, including a game-tying home run. I sat there Saturday night, and there was that baseball emotion in me that said, the Yankees are about to take off. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no doubt in my mind. And we could sit here all day and talk about, well, they need to add a bullpen arm, they need to add a rotation arm. Which they do. I'm not even denying that. But I think this is the emotional side of me. And I relate this to the Mets from this regard. I'm still waiting for that. Like, I'm not saying the Mets are dead or they suck or they're not going to make the playoffs. I'm sitting here in late July, and sometimes that moment won't happen till August. But I'm waiting for the Met moment. I'm waiting for the Met game that makes me think this is on the DVD when the season ends well. And I think the Yankees got it. And this may sound irrational, but I'll tell it to you right now. On Monday, July 21st at 2:05 p.m., they're going to win the Toronto series. And I'll take it a step further. I kind of think they're going to sweep them. I kind of think they're going to return the favor of what happened. Am I nuts
Yeah, you are feeling nuts, because Toronto feels good about themselves. Don't forget, they almost, I mean, before the Saturday win, they had a almost five-game lead on the Yankees. And
I know.
Going into the break, the 2 weeks you were off, Evan, they didn't lose, did they?
I know.
They won 10 games in a row, and I think it was the A's or somebody like that who broke their streak finally. But Toronto feels good about themselves, and it's going to take the Yankees knocking them back down to earth for them to try to win this division. But you said something interesting, Evan, about the Yankees and their moment and the explosion that happened. Leading into the All-Star break, really not even 2 weeks before the All-Star break, I kept saying about both the teams in this town, the Mets and the Yankees, they need the All-Star break. They need a rest.
Right.
They need a disconnect. They need to not think about winning and losing and grinding and leading their divisions. And what's it going to, you know, how do we follow up last year's NLCS for the Mets and World Series appearance for the Yankees? Like, we got to chill for a minute. And the Yankees came out of it and got exactly what I thought. You know what? We're refreshed.
Well, it took him a game and a half, though, Teague.
But I can almost excuse Friday because it was a bullpen game. You know what I mean? It was like, all right, we can start Ian Hamilton. We're screwed here. Let's just try to make the best out of it. But then they rebounded and got the best out of the series and won the series with two consecutive wins. I didn't see it from the Mets, though, to your point. It felt exactly the same. The bats are quiet, and you're struggling through. Edwin Diaz blows a save. The refresher that needed to happen in the All-Star break happened for the Yankees, and it didn't happen for the Mets.
No, you're right. And I'm kind of waiting, and it doesn't necessarily have to happen this week because I could go through Met and Yankee history where that moment that makes you think it's special doesn't happen until August or September. It's the 10-year anniversary of the 2015 team. Their special moment didn't happen until July 31st, 2015, which was right after they traded for Cespedes and Wilmer Flores hit the home run and was crying and all that, the happy tears after the sad tears from a few days earlier. So you never know when that moment's going to happen. But I think the Yankees had their moment on Saturday. They backed it up, and this was the most important thing, by winning on Sunday. You know, Marcus Stroman delivered. It's almost like Marcus Stroman said, all right, I feel the emotion. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go out and twirl six awesome innings. I got you covered.
Right, I'm still here.
I'm still here, and I think the Mets came close to it. And I know that Tommy eventually went to the game, which was very good news, because I was getting updates while I was away. I did not listen to anything, because that's not healthy.
Tommy, you went to the game?
Yes,
you went?
I went to the game.
What? Saturday, I was at... Oh, you missed this, Tiki. I was at the Cadillac Club with Rick, Melissa, and Constance, and it was a great time. I appreciate them inviting me as their adopted son.
You are totally adopted, dude.
But you know what's crazy? So here's the backstory I got, and Tommy, of course, can correct it and say that's not true, because this is secondhand information. What I heard was Tommy was offered the tickets and initially said, nah, it's too much of a pain.
Tommy.
I'd rather sun myself. And then felt the guilt of the WFAN audience on Friday, who basically said, what kind of Met fan are you? If you're the prophet of positivity, you need to be in the building for David Wright Day. And Tommy, rightfully so. I don't care why things happen as long as they happen. Tommy eventually relented and went to the game. So he did a great job. Is that story accurate, Tommy?
I would say that's a slight distortion of the truth, but you're right. I ultimately ended up at the game. I'm so glad I did, and all's well that ends well.
So here's why I bring that up, and Tommy's going to completely agree with me, assuming he didn't leave early. Did you leave the game early, Tommy?
I did not.
Okay.
I mean, you're in a Cadillac Club. It's hard to leave the Cadillac Club early.
It's true.
It really is.
Even if you're
not paying attention to the game and it sucks and Clay Holmes leaves in the fifth inning, as always, and things get out of hand, whatever— You're in a Cadillac Club, dude.
Yeah.
You just stay.
You also got free tickets. Like, I think once someone gives you tickets and you go with them, like, there's no way you could leave early. That's the ultimate sign of disrespect.
Right.
And think about Tommy. He's a very respectful guy. But so the Yankees, a few hours later, have their DVD moment, as I like to call it. I know DVDs are outdated, but what else are you going to call it when you have your championship video? When Juan Soto came up in the bottom of the ninth inning as the tying run, I thought what Tommy thought, what 41,000 other people thought, which is, this is Juan's moment. Not only Juan's moment, but the Mets' moment. Like, how magical would this be? They've lost back-to-back games. They're down. It looks lifeless. And Soto delivers a game-tying home run, and then they go on to win dramatically an inning later, or maybe the same inning. And Juan hits a ball that off the bat. You're like, oh, my God, it's actually going to happen. And it goes foul. And Mendy's like, hey, umpires, please take a look at it, even though it's clearly foul. And when Juan Soto struck out on that check swing, it wasn't only deflating because he struck out as the tying run at the plate.
Right.
It was deflating because it was another example, another moment potential that didn't happen. And I think Met fans are sitting here waiting for that DVD moment. We didn't get it on Saturday. They did win Sunday, and that's a nice victory, but it's not DVD quality victory. And the Yankees got theirs. The Mets came close to getting theirs. They haven't gotten theirs yet. And I'm telling you, maybe it's my emotion. I think you need that DVD moment in the regular season, almost as a wink from the baseball gods. Hey, this year has a chance to be really special.
Yeah, and you're waiting for it from the Mets, and it's not happening. And it's funny because it's always Juan Soto. I feel like every one of these situations, every one of these clutch moment, you know, bases juiced or whatever, runner in scoring position or opportunity. It's always Juan. It's never Lindor, right? It's never Pete Alonso. It's always Juan Soto. And too many times this year, it ends up being a strikeout.
Yeah.
It ends up being a wah, wah, wah moment. And I hope it, Evan, I swear, I hope it comes for you. I really do. I can't wait to hear you yelling and screaming, talking about how this was the moment when Juan Soto officially, like, tattooed that Mets logo onto his chest. Like, I want that to happen. It just isn't happening. It's for some reason they keep falling short in that moment. And I know it's frustrating for you. I really do.
Well, it is. It is because I think that what happens when you have a victory like this, led by the player you're waiting for, it sparks your team.
Of course.
Like, I go back to that game, that Yankee game from 2009, which, you know, it's only 15 years ago, so it's not a million years ago. I think most people in the audience remember it. And when you think of the 2009 Yankee championship, that game kind of jumps out at you. Joe Girardi got ejected. They beat the Braves. They were really struggling at that point. They had fallen five games out of first place. It was late June. Just for perspective on time. And they won this great game against Atlanta, and then they took off. And that's the key to all of this. Like, when you get a victory like this, and maybe this is the magical thinking that I have, is that once you get the victory, then you take off.
Right.
Then you go nuts. And that 09 team did, because they won the last game of the Braves series. They actually played the Mets right after that and swept them at Citi Field. I'll never forget that. I think A.J. Burnett was flirting with a no-hitter on a Saturday night. And the main reason I remember that is because some Yankee fan dropped beer on my scorecard. That's a true story. And I was very upset. It was in a suite. And that's why I hate suites. I have an aversion to suites because, I don't know, I just feel like it's more likely some schmuck's going to drink a beer and he's going to drop it on your scorecard. So it was bad for me, but it was great for the Yankees, and they took off, and give them, I think it was about 2 weeks later, they got to first place, and then once they got to first place, they never looked back. They ended up running away with the American League East. They ended up winning 103 games, and they win a World Series. So the key is, once you get that victory, what do you do with it?
Right.
The Mets haven't gotten it yet. The Yankees responded by winning the rubber game of a three-game series, and I sit here, like I said earlier, expecting that they're about to go off. I really do, especially they got the pitchers lined up. We know how good this offense can be. I think they're going to smack the Blue Jays around over the next few days.
Well, it does line up to be the right pitching matchups, as you talk about. I don't even know who's pitching for the Blue Jays, but it's Carlos Rodon, it is Cam Schlittler, and then Max Fried. And so it's you have exactly what you want against the division rival who took the lead from you and has been holding on to it for the last couple of weeks. So you're right about for the Yankees. And it feels like their bats are alive and awake and vicious when they need to be.
No question. Now, you mentioned who's pitching for the Toronto Blue Jays. Let me tell everybody. So tonight it's Kevin Gausman. I'm going to ask you a trivia question. Who has Aaron Judge hit more home runs against than any other pitcher in Major League Baseball?
Go ahead. Oh, let me guess. Kevin Gausman?
You nailed it. Look at that. Wow. Tinky knows his baseball, baby. So Kevin Gausman is a guy that Aaron Judge has owned. Some call him daddy. And then tomorrow, the Toronto Blue Jays. Boy, I'd love to pat them on the head and give them a lesson. The Toronto Blue Jays, in a big game, quote unquote, they're actually going to start Max Scherzer.
No, they're not. Well, he did have one good. He finally got a win, didn't he?
Yeah, no, I know he did, but it's a big game. It's Yankees Blue Jays in front of a sellout crowd at Rogers Center. We all know what's going to happen. Max is going to, you know what, the bed. This is what he does in a big spot. So I actually feel really good about what the Yankees are about to do. I'm very kind of in the middle about the Mets. Like, I know Tommy will bring the positivity, and I appreciate that. I'm not negative. I'm not telling you the season's over and they suck, but they're just mired in mediocrity right now. And we're waiting for things to change. We're waiting for that switch to be flipped, and it just hasn't happened.
Right.
And
it's just odd to say it, because you look at their record, their standings, they're still right there in the division. If 56 wins... Right, 56-44. They're 12 games over 500, which is a good spot to be in.
Sure.
I think it's just the faith in this team. And it's not because you think that there's bad players. I mean, Francisco Alvarez is coming back after raking in the minor leagues for the last couple of weeks. And you feel like, you know, Mauricio is up and down for me. In my mind, I can't figure out if I like him or I don't like him at this point after the weekend. But going into the All-Star break, he was actually playing good baseball. You know, you got the talent to do it. It's the bullpen. It's sometimes the starting pitching, but not always. And then mostly, it's just the belief. To me, it feels like belief, like an intangible with the Mets, as opposed to something that you can specifically point to and say, this is the hole. Every team has holes, but this is the issue. It's not even that. It's more like I just don't believe in him yet.
Well, I'm going to give you the opposite, and I want you to think about this. I want Tommy to think about this since he's the prophet of positivity. And, of course, we'll get your calls at 888-808-1019. When I think of the New York Yankees right now, and I say, what's their identity? Like, what makes the Yankees the team that can win this division? What makes the New York Yankees a legitimate World Series contender? Even though some Yankee fans don't think they are, I think they're nuts. The answer to me is they have a really good offense. Like, despite right. the hole at third base, they score more runs than anybody else. The numbers back it up. Like, they are a dynamic offensive team, and we've seen, we saw it on Saturday with the DVD-like victory, they're never out of a game. So when I think of the Yankees, even more so than Fried and Rodon at the top of the rotation, which is pretty good too, the identity of the New York Yankees, the strength, the thing that makes them special is their offense.
Right.
When
especially,
we come
especially
back.
2 through 5.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
It's like, how the heck are you getting through that?
And imagine if they end up getting Suarez. Like, if they end up getting a legitimate third baseman, they take a really good offense that's already the best in baseball, and they make it almost unpitchable too. So I'm not against them getting Suarez. I just think it takes their strength and makes it even greater. There's nothing wrong with that. But I want you to think about this, and I'm going to think about it too, and so will Tommy, and so will Met fans. What's the Met thing that they do really well? What's the thing about them that makes them really special and unique and can get them to a World Series? We'll get your calls coming up, 888-808-1019, the toll-free number. We'll get you set for Yankees, Blue Jays. We got a lot to do. I had a lot of spare time at the end of my vacation, and when I have spare time, I like to write things down and maybe use it for the radio. So I have three lists
right.
that I made, which we can get to, whether it's at some point today or throughout the week. But I will tell you the subjects of the three lists, and you tell me if you find them interesting. Are you ready?
I will. I mean, you must have been bored because you're also writing me like, what's going on with all the second rounders not signing any contracts in the NFL?
Yes, I was very interested.
That's a random question.
Well, because
you're in the middle of Lake Como?
I'm a loser. I'll tell you why. Because, see, your general manager was playing 4D chess and traded a second round pick.
Facts.
So
we don't have to worry.
You didn't have to worry. Meanwhile, the Jets did have to worry, but luckily Mason Taylor was signed and we're good to go. All right, so everybody's happy. But I was intrigued by the whole second round pick standoff. But here are my three lists.
Go ahead, let's hear it.
Number one, things I hate about Europe. But then there's also a list, things I loved about Europe that we should adopt here in the United States of America.
Oh, interesting.
And then the third list is unrelated to Europe. I was on the plane and really getting excited for football and the fact that training camp is starting.
Right.
Wednesday. So I power ranked the 32 starting quarterbacks in the NFL.
I mean, that. What's the flight home? 7 hours, something like that? 8 hours?
It was like 9, bro.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, that's a good way to spend 9 hours.
Whip out the jumbo package. Well, so the thing I learned is when I went to Europe, I left on the 4th of July. I left right after the Mets beat the Yankees, which is like 6 months ago, the Jeff McNeil game-winning home run game. And I got on the plane like a half hour after the Mets had held on and won that game. And it was a night flight, so it was easy to just go to sleep.
Right.
Like, oh, yeah, no big deal. Because when you land, you land. We landed in Paris. It was 8 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
Like,
you got to
go do your day.
You just go do your day. You're fine
right.
as long as you slept. If you didn't sleep, you're exhausted all day.
Exactly. And that's why I was like, I got to sleep. On the way back, I left at noon in Milan, but really that's 6 a.m. here, and we landed at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, but it was the morning, so how the hell are you sleeping?
Right.
You've been up.
You're better off staying up. You just stay awake. It's like when you fly to the West Coast, just stay up all day, even if you're tired as hell.
Exactly. That's where I made the list. That's where I got those three lists. So nice. We'll get to that coming up. But you thought about it. What is the strength of the New York Mets? Like, what makes the Mets, who are only a half game out of first place, they are right there, no question, but what is their kind of thing, if you will?
I mean, before this weekend, I would have said it's Edwin Diaz. When you have a lead in the ninth inning, he's going to close it out.
Now, it's a good answer, by the way. Top-notch close.
Right. Ultimately, I mean, it was no consequence because Juan Soto's amazing slide. He did come through in that regard, but that would have been my off the top of my head, the most reliable thing so far this year has been Edwin Diaz.
Yeah, and by the way, even though he blew the save technically on Sunday, I give him a lot of credit because he still struck out Tyler Stevenson yes. with the game tied to keep it tied and allowed the Mets the chance to scratch out a run and then hold on and win. But I do think that's a fair answer because he is the best closer in baseball. You know, you can give me Josh Hader, you can give me Emmanuel mm-hmm. Clase, you can give me whoever you want. I do agree with that. But that's not enough. Like, you're not scared of winning a championship right. because you have a top-notch closer.
Well, you also might not get to him every... I mean, how many times are you going to need him to close out the game or a
right.
game?
You have to have a lead.
Right, you have to have a lead.
So that's what makes that, if that's the strength, tricky. Now, positive Tommy, you tell me, because you believe everything's great. What is the greatest part of this Met team?
Can I give two answers?
If you think there are two things, God bless you.
Yes. I think they have three great players, obviously Lindor, Soto, and Alonso. And I think the pitching is still a strength. Remember, earlier in the year, it was awesome. You lost Senga. You lost Manaea. You have them both back now. So I think it comes back to being a strength with Diaz at the back end of that bullpen. Their pitching was so awesome earlier in the year, and I think it will reclaim that sort of form going here in the second half.
So I half agree with you, because I was giving this a lot of thought. All right, if the Mets are going to be a championship team, what are they really, really good at? I can't give you the offense anymore. And I was a big supporter of that. Right. I would have agreed with you in March and April, but we are more than halfway through the season. We are 100 games into the season, and they are a below-average offensive team. That's just what the numbers say. Like, they are a below-average offensive team. And so you're right that Juan Soto is great, and Francisco Lindor, despite his recent struggle, is great, and Pete Alonso was having a great year until recently. But it's about nine guys, and it's about, are you scoring enough runs? And they're not, and it's almost delusional to think, well, that's going to change. So I can't agree with you about the offense, but here's where I will agree with you, and this is what surprises me. If I had to pick something that makes the Mets special or unique, it's actually David Peterson, Sean Manaea, and Kodai Senga. Like, if somehow they're all healthy and stretched out, because Manaea clearly isn't when he's being pulled with a pitch count of 69, not so nice, I think that that's what can make them really special, because Senga, when he pitches, is really good.
Yep.
David Peterson is proving now, with over a year of example time, that he's one of the more sturdy pitchers in baseball. And Sean Manaea, in the two appearances he's had, even though they were relatively brief, looks pretty good. So if I had to pick the thing that makes them special, and it also takes the leap of faith, Teak, that they're going to stay healthy and they're going to be stretched out, would be the three guys to lead the rotation.
I would agree with that, but just even if you throw in Clay Holmes into that conversation, the issue is still there for all of them. That is, can they get length? Right, David Peterson is, interestingly, the one I'm not even worried about. Like, if you need to get him, he can get you to seven innings or eight innings sometimes. I'm not worried about David Peterson, but Sean Manaea, to be determined, right? Four innings, right. And okay, let's hope that that's a great start, and now he can, you know, push out at least three more innings. Kodai Senga, his last outing, what did he go, 4 1/3 or 4 2/3?
Four innings.
So I don't want to attribute it to rust and coming back from a hamstring injury, but I mean, I don't know. He's hurt, right? And so, and then you throw in Clay Holmes, and we know he's taxed out at 5 1/3. So, like, you're right. You're dead on it, because that's what led them earlier in the season. It's what allowed them to have this massive cushion. So even though they've been below 500 over the last 3 weeks or month or so, they're still sitting 12 games above 500. Like, the pitching has to be it. I just worry about the length, because as soon as you get shorted there, you're into the bullpen, and we know that is one of the weaknesses.
888-808-1019. Yankee fans, Met fans, will also get into the countdown that this station is doing, which is really, really awesome, concerning the quarter century team. We'll check in on the results, which will be very cool. Let's kick it off with Jason in Montgomery, New York. Good afternoon, Jason.
Hey, Evan, what's going on, man? Hey, welcome back from Europe.
Thank you.
Not much. Hey, Evan, is one of the things that you wrote down that you hate about Europe, that the fact that the European people question you, gambling as far as trying to score a bet game?
You know, it's funny. That happened while I was in America. Like, I was online checking my luggage at Newark Airport, and that's when these two people, I told this story, I think, on the Rico, they were like, what are you doing? Because I was scoring the Met game while I was waiting in line, and I said, I'm scoring a Met game, and she's like, I think you're gambling. And I'm like, I'm not gambling. I was waiting for the Mets to have a lead that I was going to gamble.
Know your baseball, lady.
But no, that did not make the list, Jason, though. But thank you.
I did not. Okay, I got you. Just one other point about the Mets. So I read recently that the Phillies were linked to this guy. Do you think trading for this guy would fix the center field problem? It's a familiar face for the Mets. That is bringing back Harrison Bader. Would you bring him back to fix the center field
Harrison
problem?
Bader. Thanks, Jason.
Do you think that fixes the center field issue?
Yeah. His bat is just not. It's not fixing the center field issue. Because I think Tyrone Taylor is a pretty good defensive center fielder. Harrison Bader is a really good defensive center fielder, but what are you hitting? 180?
Well, the thing is, So I want to be fair because I'll answer this in two parts. Off the top, my answer is no because I think Harrison Bader is a fourth outfielder. Mm-hmm. But Harrison Bader this season in Minnesota has already hit 12 home runs. Like, he's actually having a somewhat respectable offensive season that's far better than Tyrone Taylor. So the answer is, would he be an upgrade over Tyrone Taylor? Yes. But to me, if the Mets are adding a bat, which I would like them to add, obviously. If I don't think their offense is good enough, then sure, why not add a bat? I am no longer convinced, Teague, it needs to be a center fielder because I think that Jeff McNeil has actually proven to
me
he can go out there
yeah.
and play a reasonable center field. So I think the Mets could add a third baseman. They could add a designated hitter. They could add a second baseman. And I think if they add, obviously a center fielder too, but I think they could add any of those positions. And the Mets are flexible enough
right.
where
it gives you versatility. Right.
Yeah.
So you can go get the best bat as opposed to the bat fielding combination.
Correct. Like Eugenio right. Suarez fits the Mets too. You get him, he can DH full time, call it a day. You could play him at third base and DH Vientos, or who knows, maybe Vientos is in the deal. But I don't think it has to be a center fielder. Because I don't know if you guys feel this way. I think Jeff McNeil's been halfway decent out there.
No, he has been. Because he makes spectacular plays. He obviously makes the routine ones, but he goes and he makes the elite ones as well. And it's surprising because I don't see him as a center fielder. And every time he makes one of these diving catches or climbs the wall a few weeks ago and robs a home run, it's like he's been out there a majority of his career. And we know he hasn't. So it just tells you how great of a baseball player, baseball athlete he is.
It's the value of Jeff McNeil for right. every Met fan that wanted him traded or DFA'd or couldn't stand him. Like, one attribute of Jeff McNeil that you have to appreciate is his ability to go anywhere in the field and at least be halfway decent. I'm not telling you he's Andrew Jones out there,
no.
but he's also not an embarrassment.
Right.
And he's not embarrassing himself out there. Bob is calling from Keyport on this fine afternoon. How are you, Bob?
What about?
How you guys doing? Welcome back, Evan.
Thank you.
Do you think there's any chance that third start in 8 games against Toronto, third start for Gosman, the Yankees aren't just going to get them right away and he's going to be totally gone?
Say that one more time.
Say that again. You get a little bit of an echo. Say it slower. Bob, go ahead.
Yeah. In the 8th game against Toronto in this season,
yes,
you're having Gosman go out for the third time against the Yankees.
Oh, I got you.
There's any chance they don't pound him?
Right, I hear what you're saying.
I think that's a part of the reason why they will.
Yeah.
I mean, it's actually a really good point that and a lot of it is just coincidences or it's timing, mm-hmm. Assuming that they're setting up the rotation the way they want it to. Clearly, out of the All-Star break, you're able to do that. But, yeah, the fact that the Yankees now have seen him 3 times, and they've hit him pretty well. When they faced him back in April at Yankee Stadium, he got knocked out in the 3rd inning and gave up 6 runs and walked 5 guys. When they saw him earlier in the month, he was okay. He pitched 5 innings, allowed 2 runs. It was respectable. But I do agree, the more times you see somebody, the likelihood is the more success you'll have. But I mentioned this earlier, Aaron Judge has seen him. Aaron Judge has faced Kevin Gausman more than he has faced any other pitcher in Major League Baseball.
Is that right?
Number one.
Huh.
And it makes sense,
obviously, because of the division. But
right, and even before that, remember, he came up with the Baltimore Orioles. So early in Aaron Judge's career in 2017, he probably saw him a bunch of times because Kevin Gausman was pitching for the Orioles and obviously signed with the Blue Jays back in 2022 where he's in the division. So, and then you think about, hey, over the course of time that Aaron Judge has been in the major leagues, who's just been in the division the entire time? And the answer is probably not a lot of guys.
Yeah.
So your best player has seen him a lot and has had success against him.
Right.
You as a team have already seen him twice. I think it's more of a reason why the Yankees are going
to
pound him tonight.
To be specific on what Evan is talking about regarding Aaron Judge, 43 at-bats, hitting .372, 1369 OPS with 12 RBIs and 6 home runs. So he's raked against them.
You knew I was going to come back prepared, Tiki.
Yeah, absolutely. Not that prepared. I wasn't even thinking about that.
Well, because I'll tell you why it popped into my head. It popped into my head because I truly believe, and this is where I'm not analytical, if you will, where I do become emotional as a baseball fan, that certain wins feel so different and they feel like they're about to take your team off.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely felt that Saturday's win against Atlanta fit that for the Yankees. So they back it up with a win on Sunday. Great performance by Marcus Stroman. And now they're set up for this huge series against the Blue Jays, who, you're right, have played great baseball. But I got news for you. You could play great baseball for a couple of weeks. You could play great baseball for a month. You know what eventually happens? You cool off.
Now, Evan, Evan, hold on a second here.
Yes.
You've been gone for a long time. Maybe they didn't go up there and tell you this. It's King Aaron Judge. You've said the guy's name six times already in the span of 38 minutes. Now, I had a situation there where I was like, should I just let him keep going and run up
keep
the tab?
Keep
but I'm like, dude, you said it like seven times without saying King in front of it. Now, we were pretty good when you were gone.
Right. Were you?
We were okay.
We were okay. I mean, you guys think got you to were... the point on Thursday where I said, you know what, screw it. I'm just putting $100 in. I'm just going to, like, whatever. This is going to be my donation for the week. Let's stop thinking about it because we could not get it right some of those days.
Well, while I was gone, maybe I wasn't necessarily listening to every second. I was getting updates. And our dear friend Dan was doing live total updates on Sean Tiki, Tommy Lugauer, Paul Rosenberg, who's done a great job at times. At times. Not that you don't do great times. Great all the time, but you don't work all the time. Sometimes it's
I'm a loser.
So I have the total. Like, I know that in week two of me being in Europe, Sean Morash owed 96 King Judges. I have that figure in front of me.
96?
And here's the,
There's 96.
And here's the best part. For those that are just tuning in, we do have a rule around here that, at least on this show and the Lugauer, if you refer to King Aaron Judge without putting King in front of his name, you put a dollar into the pot, and eventually we'll donate this money to Judge King Judge's charity. So that's the rule around here. But Sean did it 96 times. And the best part is Dan provides receipts when he sends it to
wow.
me.
Wow.
He provides the transcript of the show.
Oh, wow.
That shows it wasn't said. Now, this is just week two. So the total for Sean was 96. Do you know what the total for you was, T?
I'm going to guess it's like 40-something.
No, not bad, bro. 22.
Oh, okay. All right.
Tommy. You have any idea how many times you committed a King Judge infraction?
I would say, oh, about $5.
Close, $9.
Okay, not terrible.
And somehow you guys made the decision to let Rosenberg talk because he did it twice.
I'll give you $8. No dollars, $8.
I don't know how that happened. So I'll look back at week one and we'll add it up, but clearly we are struggling with this King Judge thing.
Badly, badly struggling with it. That's why I said, you know what, screw it. I'm just going to peel off some hundreds and throw them in a pot and say, forget it. Forget it for 2 weeks. And then when we come back, we'll reevaluate this show decision that we made regarding King Aaron Judge.
Well, what do you want to reevaluate? I mean, we have
just
to
get
do
rid
it.
Of it. Make a lump donation and say we're done.
I think we have to stick with it. And I think that, you know, we're in the middle of the summer now. It's July 21st. Can we get our heads wrapped around the fact that he's King Judge and just do it?
Well, he is King Judge, but here's the problem. Wednesday this week, the football training camps start.
Yes.
And so we're going to be talking and thinking football. We're gonna, what's Dave's going to do? What's Aaron Glenn going to, how's he going to be? What's it look like on the field? What about these quarterback situations? And then all of a sudden, we're going to have to talk about the Yankees. And we're going to say, excuse me for this one. Oh, yeah, Aaron Judge hit a home run. And we're just going to forget.
Well, that's not an excuse, though.
I know, but we're going to forget because football's going to be on the mind.
I understand other things are going to be on the mind, but, I mean, it's like you're out with your wife and you're checking out somebody else, and then you call her by the wrong name. That's not an excuse just because you're distracted by the shiny object that's not as football.
Did she change her name, like, in the middle of our relationship? Because that's what this is.
That's a good one. That's a good one. By the way, I am so confused by why a CEO who's clearly having an affair with the HR woman, this was from the, what band was that? Nickelback? Coldplay?
Coldplay.
Yes. It was Coldplay.
Yes.
Okay. If you guys are cheating on each other, or you're cheating on your husbands or wives, which is not my business, not our business, right. But okay, fine.
Ultimately, we
that.
Don't care.
I don't care. Here's what I was confused by. Why are you out in public canoodling?
Right.
I don't understand.
In a suite
that.
With other people from your office.
Right.
Like, so what the hell is going on? That was my takeaway.
Oh, you felt the same way?
100%.
Like, that does not make any sense to me.
Right.
Like, what are you doing? It's almost as if it's like my son, my youngest son, Spence, who really wants to come on the show today because I happen to be at home because I had a doctor's appointment. And I apologize to Tommy because I was going to miss the first hour of the show. And I told Tommy, come on, you host it with Tiki. Meanwhile, I get out of the appointment early. I'm here on time. Tommy's sitting there like, this son of a bitch. I had the whole hour planned. This pig comes back. He can't wait to talk. So I'm going to make it up to Tommy. I think in the 4 o'clock hour, we're just going to let him do what he wants.
I'm going to do an in show Lugauer.
Yeah.
Lugie!
Yes. I think an in show Lugauer because I do feel bad. Like, he's working hard. He's sitting there. He's like, all right, it's kind of weird. I got to fill an hour, and then Evan's just going to come in here. And then meanwhile, I walked in at 1:58. Mm. And Tommy's sitting there with sheets of paper, like, all right, I'm going to talk about this. I'm good to go. And I genuinely feel really bad about it. So that's why in show Lugauer at 4 o'clock. You good with that, Tommy?
I am. I have a list of all these opinions. I got to get to them. I don't have a
Lugauer
tonight.
You and I need to have a three-way.
Well, calm down.
There you go. But my son will, like, eat a cookie. He'll have chocolate all over his mouth, come up to me and say, hey, I haven't had dessert yet. And it's like, come on, Spence, I'm looking right at you. You got chocolate all over your mouth. It's almost like Spence wanted to be caught. Like,
yeah.
I want to get in trouble. It's almost like these two, who I think have both lost their job from a company I'd never heard of.
Yeah, I think they resigned.
They resigned? Yeah. It's almost like they wanted to be caught. They're canoodling with each other at a show that features like 30,000 people. That was when I saw that story. I was like, what the hell's wrong with them?
I can't not see that story anymore. It's like all over social media. And the Philly Fanatic did it.
I know.
come on.
I'm disappointed.
It's become pop culture.
I know. I wanted Mr. Met and Mrs. Met to like have a cheating scandal this weekend. I wanted my vision was David Wright was going to have his arms around Mrs. Met.
Mm.
And then the camera would catch them.
Nice.
And obviously no one would take it seriously because it's a mascot and David Wright, who is happily married. Right. We'd all be having fun. We'd be laughing. But the Mets couldn't do it because the Phillies did it first.
Well,
which
if Bad Tiki wasn't in jail, he could have done it.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. That would have been the way to go.
They don't know what the f*** they're doing.
Bad Tiki around Mrs. Met.
Yes, well, we know how he feels about Mrs. Met. Let's go to Steve calling from Houston, Texas. What's going on today, Steve?
What's up, Steve?
Hey, welcome back, Evan, Tommy, Tiki. Great to talk to you again. Thanks for taking the call.
Thanks.
So, a couple of things here. European things that suck. Kings, Monarchs, I think you're going over that already. Mm-hmm. No ice in drinks. Sometimes they're like, oh, you want more ice? Costs more.
True.
Good things about Europe, though, when you leave your hotel room, you got to take your key with you, no electricity. Tiki. Good thing about you making the quarter century team. Congratulations.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
But let's talk about the drunk Rico that's coming up. Evan, sounds like you're heading down that dark path.
Yes.
Last year, we got to see the dark side of Evan.
Yes.
I don't think there's a Cespedes coming. I don't think there's a OMG, you know, Iglesias coming. I think we kind of have to rely on what we have. What is going on with Suri, though? Is he going to be a center fielder for us? Like, what is him? Because Winker, I'm thinking, is gone.
Well, I mean, if Jose Suri does come back, and I remember he was getting close, then he had a setback, so who knows what his timetable is. I haven't heard a timetable. I don't think they've announced one.
Right.
But even if Jose Suri comes back, you think that's the answer, Steve?
Sorry, I cut him.
I mean, you know what? It's fine. It's a rhetorical question. Right. Does anybody in their right mind think Jose Suri's the answer?
No, definitely don't. In fact, I kind of forgot about him. I thought he was DFA'd. I did. I swear. I haven't seen him in 3 months or 2 months or whatever it's been.
I'm going to give you a very boring answer, but it's a true answer. And sometimes boring is reality. Sometimes we just have to live with boring. He's right that there's no Cespedes walking through that door.
Right.
You look at who's realistically available at the trade deadline. There's nobody, at least offensively, that makes that kind of impact.
No. And the but ones that are available, everybody else is going to want them. Every single other team that's in the hunt is going to want him.
Right, but there's nobody, and that's why when we talk about the trade deadline, and I'm glad to talk about it now on July 21st, I hated talking about it a month ago because so many things were going to change. The needs of each team was going to change.
Right.
The way they were playing was going to change. Which teams are in the race was going to change. And certainly the idea of who's going to be available was going to change. But I think what you need to do, and unfortunately it's luck and you can't even predict it, is you're going to have to acquire a decent player who's not going to excite you, who somehow has a big-time October. Like the Atlanta Braves back in 2021, as they were kind of miring in a mediocre season in which the Mets led the division for most of the season, and then finally the Braves won the division sort of by default,
right,
got hot at the right time and won the World Series. They traded for four average players at the trade deadline, and they made monstrous impacts. Jorge Soler and Eddie Rosario and Jock Peterson. And I think that's the kind of move the Mets are going to have to make, a move that doesn't necessarily excite us on July 31st.
You know, it's interesting when you say that, Evan, because it makes me feel like maybe the philosophy isn't go get Eugenio Suarez, the one big name, but go get four. And it's going to cost you less. Obviously, it might cost you more, but it's going to be less big prospects. And there's bigger opportunity for one or two of those guys to hit as opposed to eggs all in one basket. It's got to be this one guy.
Right.
You know, and so maybe that's more of a philosophy that makes sense than spend all of your assets to go get this one guy who you hope is your savior, so to speak.
Well,
and if he doesn't pan out, or he just, or if he's Juan Soto in San Diego his first year there, like what did you do? You didn't really do anything. You didn't accomplish anything. Even though the name sounded great, it didn't produce anything. Where if you give yourself options, three or four guys, maybe not as big a names, maybe not as big as upside, but they get hot and they're trying to prove something not only to themselves but to their future team, whoever it may be after this year, then all of a sudden you get a chance like the Braves to win a World Series.
Yeah, I don't think that they need necessarily three or four guys. Like, the Braves basically needed an entire outfield when they made that. But I think, to give you a comparison, would be, let's take a guy like Cedric Mullins. He's a free agent at the end of the year.
Right.
And ever since he had that all-star year 5 years ago, he's just declined. He's mediocre. He's hitting .218 this year, 700 OPS. He has a negative war. Like, he hasn't been any good. And if the Mets traded for Cedric Mullins tomorrow, I think most people would look at those numbers and say, really? I'm supposed to get excited about that? And my answer to that is, I think that you almost have to hope that you bring in a player, and all of a sudden, whether it's the pennant race, whether it's a new environment, they get hot at the right time. Kind of like baseball in this era, where just make the playoffs and get hot at the right time. Because there is no slam dunk answer. So it may just be acquiring kind of an average-ish player, and then just things working out, and all of a sudden they're Cody Ross in the postseason, like Cody was for the Giants over a decade
ago. Sounds like, it sounds like Sean's favorite acquisition prior to him not being an acquirable target, Ryan McMahon.
Yeah.
Having a down season.
But yeah.
There's any chance he could probably get hot if the right situation he finds himself in after leaving Colorado, who's definitely looking to move him and probably a lot of other people.
I kind of miss Sean. Like, when I was power ranking the people I missed, Lukey, for some reason, was number one. I'm trying to put my finger on it. I don't know. Maybe I need
that. It's the shared metdom, I think.
You think that's it?
That's what it is. You missed it. You're scoring games in the middle of the night by yourself, hoping that you don't wake up somebody in the household, and you're just lonely. You want to scream and yell and say this, we need yada yada at the trade deadline about the Mets, and there's nobody to have that conversation with. And if Lugi was there, Lugi would have said, come on, Evan, let's go have a brown beverage and talk about the Mets.
I don't think that's it. I was just speculating there.
It sounded good.
It's a good speculation. Like, I don't think it's like a bad speculation. My internal speculation is that Tommy Lugauer is mysterious. And so when he's away or I'm away or it's the weekend, you don't hear much from him. You know, very, very rarely. And that's totally fine. And it just gets away. I heard plenty of Sean. I heard plenty of you, Teak.
Right.
Like, the chain was active, our text chain. I heard Sean, like, I found a way to open with the Giants. You know, and I was like, oh, great. Good for you. I mean, that's fantastic. And so you and Sean were just, you were kind of around. Like, I was away, but you were around. Tommy was like on another planet. And so I think as I get back, I'm like, Tommy exists.
Right.
Well, that's right.
You haven't actually heard from him in 2 weeks.
That's right. I listened to his show yesterday driving home from Citi Field,
and
it made me feel warm and fuzzy because he said, my dear friend Evan Roberts is probably listening to me right now coming home from Citi Field. And I was. And I was like, wow, it's like he's talking to me. So that made me feel very special.
And was I accurate in what I said? What I said, Tiki, was, so Ronnie Mauricio got booed crazy on Saturday.
For the error and then the not hitting with opportunities, et cetera. Yeah, he was bad.
That's the type of thing that Evan would jot down. And then 5 years from now, when Ronnie Mauricio is an all-star for the Mets, he's going to go, I remember when he got booed. Lugi, did you boo him? That's the kind of receipt I feel like Evan would keep, because young player gets booed, and then he could go on to be a superstar, and we all look like idiots because we booed him during his first year.
You did not boo him from the Cadillac Club.
I did not.
Good job.
Yeah, he's not a booer. He's like me. I don't boo either. But he wasn't the
from the Cadillac Club. That's uncivilized, man.
Is it?
It's the Cadillac Club, dude.
There was a lot of moaning and groaning.
Okay,
in the
moaning,
Cadillac Club.
Moaning after you're taking a sip of your cappuccino and your I don't know martinis like I drink out there.
Saturday, and Evan could talk about this as well, was so electric. It was a playoff atmosphere, good and bad. Like,
yes.
The crowd was crazy loud.
Really?
For things.
Is that just because it was David Wright Day or because it was back after the All-Star break?
I think it was David
like
Wright
random,
Day. But
it's a random Saturday.
But you know what's funny about that? Like, they had a bigger crowd Sunday than they had Saturday. They actually announced, now they're both sellouts, so it's kind of Tweedledee, Tweedledum, but there were the same amount of people there Sunday as there was Saturday.
What did they give away on Sunday?
A David Wright bobblehead.
Oh, there you go.
I know the reason.
There you go.
But Loogie's right. The atmosphere Saturday was louder than it was Sunday, and I think a part of that is the celebration of David Wright. But not only did Ronnie Mauricio get booed, Francisco Lindor heard some boos. Mm. And I got to tell you, one of the people booing was my oldest son, Jet.
What?
I caught him booing after one of Lindor's strikeouts, and I looked at him and I said, wow, you're booing Lindor. And he had a very simple answer that's tough to argue.
Yeah.
He said, yeah, we didn't get a hit.
I'm sorry to say this, Evan. I really am. I don't want to go here. I really don't. I think Jet has turn potential.
What do you mean turn potential?
I could see him becoming a turncoat.
I'm not worried about that, and I'll tell you why.
I can see it happening.
So with baseball, I'm not worried.
He already made $100 saying Mets suck.
That was smart business.
That's impressionable.
Mets suck.
BT made an impression upon him. Wait,
I'll tell you why.
I can disparage my team and make money by doing so, and they suck right now? Okay, I might have to be a Yankee fan.
Wouldn't we all do that? Like, if BT offered me $100 to say Mets suck, I'd say it 100 times in a row.
Oh, hell yeah.
I mean, who cares?
Exactly.
But
you're old and not impressionable.
No, you're right.
He's not young and impressionable.
He's impressionable. I shouldn't tell you this because you could do stuff with it, but screw it. I'll tell you anyway. I think he's turnable with football. I do. And that's a part of why I'm going to start taking him to a lot of Jet games this season. Mm. I think he's definitely turnable with hockey. Not very turnable with basketball. I think he's just set. Yeah, we're Net fans and we suck.
Right.
The reason he's not turnable with the Mets is because he hates Yankee fans.
Oh, that's right.
And he's told
that. Because of his friends. His friends are Yankee fans. Right, that's right.
And we're in Westchester, so it's overwhelming. So I'm not worried about that, but his answer was, yeah, he didn't come through. And I'm like, all right. I mean, I don't boo. Grandpa doesn't boo, but okay. If you want to boo Francisco Lindor, fine. And by the way, Francisco Lindor hasn't had a hit in 6 months. So you could kind of understand it.